Did this man launch the 1960s counterculture?
300 years ago, if I were to say, do you know that there's a level of energy around us which is invisible, but which is powerful and beautiful and has all sorts of meanings, you'd think I was a nut or a pariah, and I'd be lucky to stay out of jail as I am today. The same thing is true of LSD. LSD is like a microscope which opens up awareness of energies which are there, and I think will be used in the future as a form of education, as a form of self-growth. The microscope of LSD will help us see more, see faster, and see deeper.
That's an excerpt from a TV interview with Timothy Leary in the early 60s. Leary's one of the central figures in Don Lattin's new book. It's called The Harvard Psychedelic Club, How Timothy Leary, Ram Dass, Houston Smith, and Andrew Weil Killed the 50s and Ushered in a New Age for America. Lattin calls their experiences with psychedelic drugs the foundational myth of the 60s. He told And Strange Champs that it all started when Timothy Leary swallowed some magic mushrooms in Mexico in 1960.
He had this incredible trip, which he later described as the most profound religious experience of his life. And this was not a religious man. I mean, Timothy Leary was, he was raised Catholic, but he was very, very much a secular, you know, academic, a clinical psychologist. And so were the other people who he would work with at Harvard. So they were very puzzled that they were having these religious experiences, mystical experiences, you know, a sense of awe and wonder and interconnectedness, you know, kind of stuff that the saints and sadhus have been talking about for centuries. So that's why they brought in another member of the club, who's a Houston Smith. He was a philosophy professor at MIT who knew Aldous Huxley and made some connections with them with Huxley there. He was their theological consultant in a way. They wanted to have him try these drugs, which Houston had not tried. Houston had been writing about mysticism, but he'd never, and meditating actually, for quite a few years, but he'd never had what he would call a full-blown mystical experience. So he wanted to try these drugs.
And what was Houston Smith's first experience like?
It's funny, you know, Houston's 90 years old. He lives in Berkeley. He took his first trip with Timothy Leary at Timothy Leary's house on New Year's Day, 1960-61. And when Houston talks about this, I mean, his eyes, you know, widen and he lights up like a little kid and he says, "Oh, Don, what a way to start the 60s. So, I mean, it looks like he has this enthusiasm like he's a little kid, you know, and this is like, and this is 50 years ago that this happened, you know. And he had a both a revelatory and a terrifying experience on his first trip. I mean, he thought he had died. His body had disappeared. So his first experience was one of both awe and terror, which is important, I think, for people to remember when they if they try these drugs, which I'm not recommending, by the way. Mm-hmm. They can be very dangerous, especially from a psychological point of view.
One of the fascinating things about all of this is that, well, I guess it was Leary, mostly, who was so on fire from that first trip, from his first experience, that he came back just determined that he would share this with the world and that it would revolutionize psychology and maybe the entire Western culture.
Right. Yeah, he was. And he was just on a 3-year appointment at Harvard. And people forget that he was seen as a rising star in clinical psychology. And we remember him, you know, from later in the 60s as this kind of wild-eyed, you know, mad prophet, the high priest of LSD. But you have to remember, when this all started back at Harvard, the 60s hadn't really happened yet. What we think of as the 60s, you know, like San Francisco, the Grateful Dead, Indian bedspreads, you know, Jefferson Airplane. None of this had happened.
What was the Harvard Psychedelic Club like in its heyday?
Well, it started out as a research project, and the idea was, Leary's idea was that in the beginning, graduate students, not undergraduates, but undergraduate students would take these drugs, and initially it was psilocybin, not LSD, which is a similar effect, and they would write up reports about their experiences and talk about it. Then Leary did an experiment out at Concord Prison, a prison in Massachusetts, where he gave psilocybin to prisoners and actually took the graduate students, and Leary would take these drugs with the prisoners.
But then there were, during its heyday, I have the impression there were, you know, dozens of people kind of flowing in and out of Timothy Leary's house in Boston who were experimenting with psilocybin all the time, some of them affiliated with Harvard, but some not.
Right. It started out, like I say, as a serious research project, but it quickly morphed into something else. I mean, what it morphed into was really the beginning of the 60s counterculture. It really started right in Leary's living room in Newton, Massachusetts, where he had Allen Ginsberg in there taking psychedelics with various people. Alan Watts, the famous Buddhist scholar, came through. William Burroughs. But it quickly became a big party, and it got out of control very quickly, and that's why they got into trouble.
Well, at first, in those heady early days, it was all very exciting, and the people who were beginning to experiment, Timothy Leary, Richard Alpert, who later became Ram Dass, Houston Smith, Andrew Weil, everybody was sort of in the same mindset about this, but it all kind of fell apart. There were betrayals. You know, people broke up with each other. You've uncovered part of this story for the first time. Do you want to tell what happened?
A lot of people think they know what happened to Timothy Leary and Richard Alpert at Harvard, you know, but what's, I think, new in my book is it's really the first detailed account of the role that Andrew Weil played in all this. Andrew Weil was about a generation younger than the three other characters I've mentioned, Leary, Alpert, and Houston Smith. He was a freshman at Harvard when he first volunteered to be a research subject. Basically, what happened is he went with a friend of his named Ronnie Winston, and they volunteered to be research subjects. But Leary and Alpert had agreed to not use undergraduates, so they said they couldn't participate. Anyway, about a year later, what happened is Richard Alpert ran into Ronnie Winston, Weil's friend, at a party and wound up striking up a very close friendship with him. Even there was some sort of romantic attraction, and Alpert says, because he was a gay man living in the closet at the time, brought Ronnie Winston into the fold, and he started taking psilocybin with them, even though he was an undergraduate. This happened with other undergraduates. Andrew Weil basically got jealous. He didn't have most favored student status, and he wasn't part of the in crowd. So he basically brought them down by doing an expose in the Harvard Crimson, the student newspaper, and working as a spy for the Harvard administration simultaneously to gather evidence that undergraduates were being given these drugs, and went about it in some pretty heavy-handed ways, too. There's still hard feelings about this 50 years later. It's pretty incredible. I've interviewed all the, you know, surviving characters here. And
of course, they were all also taking huge quantities of drugs at the time. Didn't Leary say at some point he dropped acid 300 times?
Yeah, they both did. They were asked. I mean, Leary was asked at a notorious interview in Playboy, which was published in 1966. And I forget the number, but it's something like, you know, he had taken 238 LSD trips, you know, in the last few years. I mean, that's quite a bit. Anyone who's taken this drug, sort of, you know, their jaw drops when they hear that.
But it's maybe surprising to see their personal relationships getting shredded in the process.
Yeah, I mean, Alpert tells this one story about they had an experiment later on at this place called Millbrook, a mansion in upstate New York where they landed after getting kicked out of Harvard, where a group of them locked themselves in this house, this kind of side house on the estate, and they took a large dose of LSD every 4 hours for 2 weeks and thought they were maybe going to have some breakthrough and become all one with each other. And what wound up happening is they wound up hating each other. And there's all kinds of, you know, rants and recriminations. And it was actually one of the moments where I think Richard Alpert saw that LSD was not going to save the world and helped inspire him to go to India, become a spiritual teacher, and encourage people to find kinder and gentler ways to explore this same realm.
So it was after that that Leary pretty much found himself persona non grata in the U.S. and got kicked out of several other countries as well. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what happened to each of the four men you profiled.
Well, I mean, Leary led such a fascinating life. He was kicked out of Harvard. They were kicked out of three countries in the next 6 months, Mexico and two Caribbean countries. They landed in Millbrook, beautiful 3,000-acre estate with a 64-room mansion in upstate New York. And they were there in the mid-60s. It was like the psychedelic Disneyland. It was pretty notorious. And then Leary came out to San Francisco. He ran for governor of California against Ronald Reagan. Leary's campaign slogan was Come Together, which helped inspire the Beatles song Come Together. There's actually three Beatles songs you can attribute to Leary. Richard Nixon called Timothy Leary the most dangerous man in America, to which Leary replied, "Oh, yeah? Well, I have America surrounded," which is a classic Leary line. But the CIA was after him, and he was thrown in prison for a very minor marijuana charge. He escaped from prison in Southern California with the help of the Weather Underground, specifically with William Ayers, who we've heard about recently as Barack Obama's so-called terrorist pal. Remember that? Bill Ayers. And Bernadette Dorin. He escaped from prison, was smuggled to Algeria, was taken in by the Black Panthers and Eldridge Cleaver, who were living in exile in Algeria at the time. Eldridge Cleaver and Leary had a falling out, and basically, Leary was being kept prisoner by the Black Panthers then in Algeria. They were trying to re-educate him and get him to denounce LSD, which he wouldn't do. He had escaped from the Panthers. He went to Switzerland. He lived for a couple of years in Switzerland, wound up in Afghanistan, where he was kidnapped by the CIA, these extraordinary renditions. They happened back then, too. And brought back to prison. Later becomes a government snitch to get out of jail, loses a lot of his friends on the left. You know, the story goes on. I mean,
in some ways, the more interesting part of your story in terms of the later effect on our culture, an effect we're still living with, is what happened to Houston Smith and Andrew Weil.
In a funny way, Leary probably had the least effect, certainly the least positive effect. Whereas Andrew Weil, as many people know, you know, went on to write several best-selling books about holistic health, calling for a true reformation of the, you know, healthcare system in this country. He's had PBS series. He was put on the cover of Time magazine twice in the 90s, named one of the 25 most influential men in America.
And I think credits some of his insights or some of his interest in alternative medicine or mind-body medicine to his early experiments with LSD.
Yes, he does. He says it was having this new way of looking at the connection between his mind and body and his spirit, how what happens in his mind can actually have a physical effect in his body. That was one of the things that got him originally interested in alternative medicine.
So in that sense, you can say that the influence of LSD is still with us. And Houston Smith?
Houston Smith, he had a falling out with Leary, too. He thought Leary was a bit of a megalomaniac, which I think he was. But Houston Smith went back to the classroom and, you know, taught for decades. His book, The World's Religions, is the kind of Bible for interfaith movement and world's religions. He's done more than anyone, I think, to encourage tolerance of other people's faith. And then, of course, you have Ram Dass, who started out as Richard Alpert. I mean, he became one of the most important spiritual teachers of my generation, the baby boom generation, and encouraged many people to explore Buddhism and Hinduism and different kinds of meditative practices. So, you know, in terms of religion, spirituality, medicine, health and well-being, I think those are the main ways you see the effect of all this, at least as expressed through these three men's careers.
Don Lattin is the author of The Harvard Psychedelic Club. He talked with Anne Strange Champs.